Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio. Brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com. Now, here's your host.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a good one. And remember, we could not be telling these stories without the help of our sponsor, OnPay, so please support them so we can continue to share these stories. Today on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Diane Willish, and she is with SPAD, Service Providers Association for Developmental Disabilities. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
Now,
glad to be here.
I also know you're with the United Cerebral Palsy of Georgia as well, but we're here to talk about SPAD today, right?
Yes, that's correct. I'm the president and CEO of United Cerebral Palsy of Georgia and South Carolina, but also serve as a board member of SPAD, and which is, like you said, Service Providers Association for Developmental Disabilities.
So now tell us about that work. Who does it serve, and how do you do it?
Okay. Well, SPAD is an association of organizations throughout Georgia who provide daily services to children, adults, and their families who have intellectual or developmental disabilities.
So now, the association that serves the service provider, or does it help kind of the consumer get a hold of these people? Like, what's your role in the ecosystem?
Our role is to impact, the association's role really is to impact public policy awareness and funding for the organizations that are members so that they can most effectively provide the hands-on services to, like I said, children, adults, and their families that have are impacted with intellectual or developmental disabilities. So the members of the association are the organizations that provide the services. And like I said, we're trying to impact public policy and awareness about the needs.
And then those people, are they kind of assisted living of some sort, some group homes? Are they individuals? Like, how is the group defined?
The membership of the organization provides an array of different services, really almost a cradle-to-grave kind of concept. The majority of the services are provided to adults, and they look different. They're very person-centered, meaning designed around what the person wants, wishes, dreams about how they would live their life. So some folks live what I would say maybe semi-independently in an apartment if they're able to navigate the world in that way with maybe drop-in support from a direct support professional, a staff person. Some people live in group living arrangements that are typically for individuals, single-family home, very ordinary, any neighborhood, anywhere, with 24/7 support from staff. Other people provide and people participate in all manner of adult enrichment activities during the week. So, for example, some people may go to a center that might serve as a hub where they move in and out during the day, during the week, to different community-based activities, whether it might be volunteer activities, leisure kinds of engagements, classes, and those kinds of things. Other people, depending again on interest and capability, are individuals who may maintain a job in the community. And so that's really the kinds of adult services. And then there's respite care for families who have children with disabilities and need a break or a little bit of assistance. So that's really the majority of the kinds of services. And every member organization of SPAD just looks a little bit differently because they're meeting the needs of their local communities. So it just depends on kind of from that menu of services what they may offer those in their community.
Now, for those who don't know, walk through, like, if you could, like, what happens? You're a parent of a child who has these disabilities. like at each stage of the developmental cycle, you know, for some families, it's the kid goes to high school, college, and then, you know, you don't see him on holidays. Like,
right.
Walk through what it's like for the parent of a child that has disabilities, like their path.
Yeah, right. It's a little bit complicated because generally speaking, there might be additional assistance that a child with a disability might need versus a neurotypical or a typically developing child. So, you know, in the early years, it could be early intervention programs, therapies, and so forth. And really, that kind of depends on the level of disability, but there are services that are supported in large measure by state government, either through the Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Disabilities, or in some instances with really young kids through the Department of Public Health and also Community Health, which funds the Medicaid program. So, you know, young people then would go to, you know, typical school, but would either be in what's called kind of quote unquote a self-contained classroom, where the students in the room are all students with disabilities, developmental or intellectual, of course. And then it could be that the child, depending on their capacity and also family's interest to a degree, they could be included in a very typical classroom, kindergarten, fifth grade, whatever, with some assistance if needed. So a one-on-one support kind of person that generally in the business, so to speak, is called a paraprofessional or a parapro. Then, you know, from there, from high school, you know, there are beginning to be around the country, and certainly in Georgia, I think they are now at most of the state universities, what are called post-secondary programs. And it's kind of a specialized college experience for a young adult with a developmental disability, but it's kind of a peer matching program where students that are studying human development might be paired with a student with a disability, and it gives the young person with a disability the opportunity to kind of experience a more typical young adulthood. But for the most part, young people who leave high school then are usually referred to organizations like United Cerebral Palsy or any of our member SPAD member organizations for ongoing support and services, such as the day enrichment kinds of activities I talked to you about, or employment through supported employment or those kinds of things. And, you know, obviously parents are aging at this point, and then the need to begin to look for alternatives for housing to maybe free them up if they're not capable of providing the care anymore, if they need to work and can't provide the care that's needed at home, then kind of the path moves into a residential supported housing kind of arrangement.
And then in order to help these people that have these developmental challenges and then to create some sense of an atypical livelihood where there is a job and work and things like that, you partner with organizations and also businesses that provide those opportunities?
Well, I think what happens, yes, the member organizations of SPAD, you know, are those, you know, kind of the quote unquote professionals in provision of services, because you want individuals with intellectual or developmental disabilities to really have lifelong learning, not unlike we want for the rest of us, right? But it may be in a more specialized way or different learning strategies and maintaining skills and knowledge and ability that was developed through the educational process. So the organizations provide the services, but they're all community-based organizations. So they always look to local businesses for support, whether it be in offering volunteer opportunities to individuals, whether it be other in-kind kinds of contributions. Clearly, most of the organizations are nonprofits, so obviously any financial support there could be, but just helping the individuals that are being served by the member organizations to be able to help those that they serve really become part of the collect, complexion of the local community. And that's also done with the help of direct support professionals, what we call DSPs, which who are really the caregiving personal support kind of person that helps the person, whether it's in their home, navigating the community, in whatever fashion of daytime activities and so forth. And they're really central to our work, the direct support professionals.
And then this, like you mentioned earlier, the people who have these challenges could have a variety of skills. And just because they have some developmental challenges doesn't mean they can't participate to a large degree and help organizations further whatever their mission is. So this isn't you're just funding them to stay alive. This is actually giving them meaning and then providing them a path, like you said,
absolutely,
for lifelong learning.
Absolutely. Enriching their lives and, like I said, becoming part of the community. You know, this has been I've been doing this work for over 40 years. This has been a long process. You know, many years ago, people like the people I'm talking about were immediately told when they were born, the families were told they need to be in an institution, they'll never have a typical life, and so on and so forth. And certainly over the years, we've all learned that that's not necessarily true at all. And so, you know, people are working, people are volunteering, people are adding to the life of a community versus being tucked away in an institution somewhere.
And some of the associations that you work with are helping kind of be that bridge between the individuals and the businesses to see if there are matches that, hey, there is an opportunity to give these people some work opportunities and you
right.
And we can help you kind of facilitate that. It's not just like, hey,
right.
Just send over a check and then we'll take care of it. There is ways to kind of
right.
create a symbiotic relationship.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we very much, all of our member organizations very much want to partner with their local business communities in order to accomplish those kinds of goals. And you know, this is a two-way street. I think that when, certainly in the employment or volunteer arena, when people are, when there's diversity in the workplace, which doesn't necessarily mean diversity of ethnicity or sexual preference or whatever the case may be, it's also the neurodiversity too. It's people that are potentially operate a little bit differently in their thinking, but they certainly add a richness to the workplace.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I had... when my child was in school, in elementary school, there was some kids with developmental challenges and they were able to, he became friendly with one or two of them and they would include him in as part of their kind of tutoring. And it changed
right.
his outlook on how he sees people. And he's so much more empathetic. Like it really made a huge impact that it might be considered a small thing, but it was a big thing. It did make an impact.
Well, and I mean, that's how you change the culture, right? And you change society one step at a time, one person at a time. So yeah, that's a great thing that your son was exposed to that. When my son was a young child many, many years ago, and I worked for United Cerebral Palsy in South Florida, we started the first inclusive early intervention preschool program. So I had the benefit of being able to have my typically developing kid be part of this classroom of three-year-olds, and until he went to kindergarten, actually, with kids that were developing different than him. And I think it really changed his emotional makeup. I mean, his character is very different for that experience. So it's the same as you're saying about your child.
So now tell us about the They Deserve More program and why was that created?
Well, this is an offshoot of SPAD, the Service Providers Association, and the objective is to draw attention to a critical shortage of people to do the work as the support partner, so to speak, the direct support professional. Like I said, we call them DSPs for short, who really are the partner and the helper to the individual with the intellectual or developmental disability, so that whether it is within the confines of a day enrichment kind of situation where they it may provide transportation to and from a location and then help the individual, whether they're taking an art class or whether they're volunteering somewhere or whether they're learning a job. They are there to be the assistant to that person to help them in any way that they need help. You may have an individual who has really significant physical disabilities who, while they are in the community, may need assistance using the restroom, may need assistance opening and eating their lunch, whereas another individual may just need the instructions that have been given. Let's just, again, use the art class, for example. The instructions that are be giving may be breaking those steps down into a more understandable level for the individual. Then, of course, when these DSPs, direct support professionals, are assisting people on a 24/7 basis, maybe at home, they are providing an array of care. I mean, they wear multiple hats. They're a chauffeur, they're a medication assistant, they're a cook, they're a housekeeper, they're a personal care attendant, providing the most intimate care for people to the degree that they may need it. They may need just help learning to brush their teeth or being able to do it thoroughly, or they may need far more care with their personal hygiene than that. And then they're also, quote unquote, a trainer or a teacher because they're teaching life skills as part of their living in a home, you know, menu planning, setting the table, doing dishes, you know, all of those kinds of things. They're also a friend and in some instances a substitute parent. There is an enormous critical shortage of these kinds of people that would desire to do this work or do this work around the country. And in fact, in a recent study for Georgia conducted by a well-known national organization, the turnover rate for these direct support positions in Florida is over 40%. It's about 41, 42%. That is a horrific level of turnover, and any business can identify with the notion of having to churn that many staff people in a year, no matter what the business. There's an enormous cost associated clearly with onboarding staff and so forth and training them. But the issue is the continuity of care. And imagine individuals that we're talking about, those with the disabilities, you know, they could have a really great relationship with a staff person, long history with them, and all of a sudden they come home one day and that staff person is no longer there, and there's a new face and a new person and a new relationship to have to build. And this happens 41% of the time throughout the course of a year. The biggest issue with this personnel, it's a very, very hard job, but an extremely rewarding one. So what we see is that part of the issue is level of pay. I don't think that on the whole, people, the community at large, recognizes the value of the work that the folks do. So reimbursement to the providers from the sources, which is generally Medicaid, to provide those services is not at a level that enables the organizations hiring direct support people to pay them the kinds of wages that are really what we say is a livable wage. In many instances, the majority of instances, the people that are providing this kind of work or doing these kinds of jobs have a second full-time job or at least a second part-time job just to merely make ends meet. Really, the working poor, who I think, in my opinion, are the people that we should be supporting and encouraging the most, because they are putting in an extraordinary amount of effort to be contributing members to their communities, but they don't earn a livable wage. And I would add, if I could, I know I've been a little long-winded on this, but I think I would add that the important issue, I think, for people, for your listeners to understand and the community at large to understand is we're all potentially a mishap in a crosswalk, a car accident, a little stroke, or some kind of illness away from needing a person to be a caregiver to us. So clearly the elderly are facing this. You know, we have the baby boomer generation all retiring. And while the population might be different, the kind of person that does the work is the very same. And so whether we talk about people with intellectual and developmental disabilities needing this kind of support, I think the thing that might light the fire of support for our advocacy around direct support people is the knowledge that, you know, all of us at some point are going to need some fashion of a caregiver.
Amen to that. It's happening more and more. And as more people kind of experience it closer to them personally, I'm sure this is going to change. Like you said, with the baby boomers retiring and having to deal with some of these health issues that are going to bubble up and then make it very personal. Now, I think some of the challenges when it comes to these caregivers is that the care is so diverse, you know, their ability to handle so many different challenges must be very difficult to match the right folks with the right people.
Right. It is a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge to recruit in this workforce, to get people that have the, you know, the really intrinsic qualities and characteristics of empathy and compassion and
patience,
determination, patience. Yes. But also then it is, as you said, which is so spot on, is the notion that you have to be very flexible in being able to provide varying levels of support, varying types of interactions, because the population of people you work with are not all the same. So that's where the employer, the provider organizations really step up to play with respect to how they train and onboard the staff. It's a very extensive training process and really very uniquely tailored training for each individual. I know in our own organization at United Cerebral Palsy, when we recruit new employees, they're in almost 2 weeks worth of classroom type training, and then a good amount of on the job sorts of training, but really tailored to each person. I mean, we have a whole portfolio of information about each individual and really go through that information and material with the new hire to very in-depth, very extensive training so that they can begin to understand each person they're going to be working with and how to best meet their needs.
And then I'm sure with the pandemic going on right now, that's impacted a lot of how you train new people, number one, and also how it's impacting all of the individuals that are being cared for by these folks.
Well, yes. I mean, most of the individuals with all the organizations around the state have been on, you know, the shelter in place order. They're to a high degree, while just having an intellectual disability doesn't make you vulnerable, there are a significant percentage of the people that are supported by the organizations that do have co-occurring issues and medical concerns. So they are seen as those that are vulnerable. So at this point, they're still complying with the governor's order of kind of a lockdown for vulnerable citizens till June 12th, and we'll kind of go from there. But yes, the challenge is in providing the support during the pandemic has certainly been extraordinary for our staff. They have been heroic beyond measure. Many organizations have been able to offer them kind of extra duty pay to recognize their efforts in, while maybe leaving family members or children that are out of school or whatever the complication may be, but still honoring their commitment to the work and supporting the individuals that they may care for who are now, you know, at home 24/7, whether it's with their in their family home or in an organization's group kind of situation. It's been a remarkable challenge, and they've really risen to the occasion. And I think that that speaks to the kinds of employees that they are. And it speaks to, I think, the message we want to try to convey to local businesses and, you know, the citizens of the state in general, that these are the direct support professionals are really so, so important to the fiber of a community in providing for the care of people, you know, the most vulnerable of citizens in the state. And the recognition they deserve, not only monetary, but with respect and admiration, quite frankly.
So if somebody wanted to learn more, if there's a business out there that wants to kind of support your work, what are some of the ways they can get a hold of you and your team in the variety of ways you do serve?
What people could do, I would encourage them if they're interested, because I can work as a conduit to our membership around the state, and there are members all over the state of the association. They could email me at dwilush, W-I-L-U-S-H, at ucpga.org, or they could reach me by phone at 770-676-2000. And also SPAD, S-P-A-D-D, the Service Providers Association, has a website where you can communicate through there as well. And really, we're hoping for people to reach out and connect with us to support the work. And as we pursue our They Deserve More campaign, and really the essence of that was the notion that they, being the individuals we care for, deserve more, meaning almost more being better than a 40% turnover rate of their staff. They deserve the consistency of employees and helpers, and that the individuals doing the work, the direct support professionals, they deserve more because of what they do for the community with the most vulnerable among us.
Well, Diane, thank you so much for the work that you do and sharing your story today.
Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Atlanta Business Radio. And once again, those websites for SPAD is SPAD, SPADD.org, and They Deserve More, GA.com for that organization. And please reach out to Diane and her team. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio. And remember, we could not be sharing these stories without the support of our sponsor, OnPay. So please support them so we can continue to share these important stories.
Today's episode of Atlanta Business Radio is brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com. We'll be right back.